You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Time of meditation. So if you're so able, I invite you to just sit up a little bit straighter in your seats without slumping or stretching, and just feel your way into your body as if you were putting your hand into a glove. Feel all those tiny tingles in your body. Feel the breath moving through like waves coming and going, and releasing the breath. It is said that the world from space, our planet home, is like a blue jewel shining because most of the Earth's surface is covered with water. And so in our human body, right about an equal proportion of ourselves is saline water. We might recall a time, if it's safe to do so, when we wept tears. Tears of joy, tears of sadness, tears of frustration. And to recall, if we can, how that felt for us when we acknowledged our grief and our yearning, when something in us overflowed. When we experience the new dimension of being human, allowing the breath to flow like waves on the shore, feeling our way into our body. Some words by the Australian poet Michael Lunig, who in 1992 wrote a reflection called The Festival of Weeping. The first one, Nocturnal Dog Weeping. The second, solo shoulder weeping. Simple nude tree weeping. Priming, primal, lavatorial, sobbing. Structured, ceremonial group weeping. Vague, ongoing, all persuasive weeping. Cold monastic candle weeping. And lastly, deep rhythmic urban carpet sobbing. And taking a few deeper breaths and emerging back and opening our eyes, and if we want to, gazing at the screen and allowing that beautiful beach scene to refresh us. As the poet Rozanov once said, all religion shall pass, but this shall remain, sitting in a chair and looking into the distance. Well, after that intensity, we're going to hear some music by Mozart, who causes us to laugh and weep equally in good measure.
The two names in the beginning, Repin's, which you may not know, that is a coffee shop in Sydney, and Lorenzini's is a wine bar also in Sydney. Word goes around Repin's. The murmur goes around Lorenzini's. At Tattersall's, men look up from sheets of numbers. The stock exchange scribblers forget the chalk in their hands, and men with bread in their pockets leave the Greek club. There's a fellow crying in Martin Place. They can't stop him. The traffic in George Street is banked up for half a mile and drained of motion. The crowds are edgy with talk, and more crowds come hurrying. Many run in the back streets, which moments ago were busy main streets, pointing. There's a fellow weeping down there. No one can stop him. The man we surround, the man no one approaches, simply weeps and does not cover it. Weeps, not like a child, not like the wind, like a man, and does not declaim it, nor beat his breast, nor even sob very loudly, yet the dignity of his weeping holds us back from his space, the hollow he makes about him, in the midday light, in his pentagram of sorrow. And uniforms back in the crowd who try to seize him and stare out at him and feel with amazement their minds longing for tears as children for a rainbow. Some will say, in years to come, a halo or a force was around him. there is no such thing. Some will say they were shocked and would have stopped him, but they would not have been there. The fiercest manhood, the toughest reserve, the slickest wit amongst us trembles with silence and burns with unexpected judgments of peace. Some in the concourse scream who thought themselves happy. Only the smallest children and such as look out of paradise come near him and sit at his feet with dogs and dusty pigeons. Ridiculous, says a man near me, and stops his mouth with his hands as if it uttered vomit. And I see a woman shining, stretch her hand and shake as she receives the gift of weeping. As many as follow her also receive it. And many weep for sheer acceptance, and more refuse to weep for fear of all acceptance. But the weeping man, like the earth, requires nothing. The man who weeps ignores us and cries out of his writhen face an ordinary body. Not words, but grief. Not messages, but sorrow, hard as the earth, sheer, present as the sea. And when he stops, he simply walks between us, mopping his face with the dignity of one man who has wept and now has finished weeping. Evading believers, he hurries off down Pitt Street.
So thank you for reading, Barbara. And that was from Les Murray, who died this year, 2019. It is hard to speak of tears. Are not tears a sign of the limitation of speech? When in bewilderment the tongue fails, the heart speaks, and the eyes utter tears. So writes the 20th century Coptic monk Father Matta El Maskin in his book The Orthodox Prayer Life. And Father Matthew died in 2006 and was responsible in part for the remarkable revival of the Coptic Church in Egypt, which has been so persecuted, particularly in recent generations. But his words are a good beginning to this address on the gift of tears. And even the title, The Gift of Tears, comes from the Orthodox Church, which sees the gift of tears as being a gift of God that calls human beings into their full authenticity. So in that tradition, to weep is the desire to live with integrity and congruence. The tongue fails and the heart speaks. So as we reflected this morning already on the gift of tears and meditated on tears, maybe we have heard our heart speaking deeply to us. Now, from my own experience, I recall that as a boy I used to weep a great deal. But my father did as well. He would often cry, and in part this was due to his post-traumatic stress disorder from serving in the Air Force during the Second World War over Burma and Germany. He was a very disturbed human being and very gentle, but used to weep often. But going to secondary school in England soon beat the tears out of me. And for several decades, I suffered a weeping drought. Occasionally, tears would come into my eyes, but nothing more than that. And I wasn't able to cry for many significant things, including the death of my father when I was 17. But in midlife, the tears came back, and I'm very pleased to have them back. because if I reflect upon my life, often I've been quite an angry kind of person, and tears somehow heal that anger or put it into its proper perspective. And as I was reflecting, particularly during the thunderstorm last night, I think anger without tears or laughter is a bit like those terrible dry strikes where lightning falls and sets the bush ablaze without the rain to put it out. Salt water, salt water. Just the other day, in intensive care in the Royal Adelaide, we had a man in midlife who came from regional South Australia, and he was discovered by his brother after he'd hung himself. What a terrible thing, particularly for the person who discovers somebody in that particular situation. Unfortunately, the person did not recover. I sat with him. His family came in to say farewell to their loved one. But I remember sitting with the brother who discovered him, again, a man from regional Australia, somebody who was a member of the CFS and the SES, a stoic country farmer. You know the kind, don't you? A stoic country man. And as we sat there and he had to go down and identify the body, I could see his body quivering. And both the social worker and myself, we put a hand on his shoulder and we both said almost simultaneously together, "It takes a strong man to cry. It takes a strong man to cry." And he said, "I've just got to be strong and I've got to kind of see this through." But we said, "Weeping is okay. This is a terrible thing that has happened." So what is it that we have done to human beings, particularly to men in our society, that we've encouraged this terrible taboo against crying? As Father Matta, the Coptic monk, pointed out, that the gift of tears can easily become dangerous or destructive. But equally, a lack and ability to cry and to mourn, whatever form that takes, can be very destructive for a human being or indeed for a human community. So this really brings me onto the text that I've chosen for today, An Absolutely Ordinary Rainbow by Les Murray. And thank you, Barbara, for reading it so well. And I remember being gripped when I first heard this poem. And it was only a year since I'd moved to Australia from serving with the Air Force in Britain as a chaplain. And I remember how I was gripped by this poem. It somehow struck me when I heard it read at a spirituality conference by Father Tony Kelly from the Catholic University in Melbourne. So this poem particularly addresses a taboo in our society about weeping in public. Weeping in public, especially by men. So these are not about crocodile tears spoken by repentant preachers and politicians. Tears as weapons, tears as a kind of a bribery or a threat. Tears as a way in to become fully human, to live with congruence, with integrity, and with compassion. And as Barbara pointed out in a very helpful introduction to the poem, this is said in the heart of Sydney, a place I know well. I used to go often there for work. And like many a big city, not so much Adelaide, nobody really cares, nobody looks you in the eye. So I think right at the get-go, there's a sense of incongruity about this poem, because most of the time people are simply tied up with themselves, or particularly these days with their mobile phone. So sometimes we just don't notice what's going on around us. So in this poem, people are drawn to this spectacle, and they travel to see this amazing experience of a man weeping in Martin Place. And the fellow weeps like a man. He weeps like a man. And you may have noticed already, and you can look this poem up on the internet, that the poem is full of symbolism. So, for example, there's the pentagram, which is a pagan symbol, which is evoked here. There's a space that gathers around this weeper. We acknowledge the dignity of the person. Whereas normally we think about a person weeping uncontrollably in public as losing their dignity. In those who surround him, there's an experience of awakening and longing, maybe a sense of superstition by the people who saw a light around his head. But you remember that the woman stretches out her hand and is healed. And you'll notice that movement between the person covering their mouth as if they were trying to be repelled by this or to cover up their own weeping, as well as those who felt very much at ease, including the young children. Sorrow hard as the earth, sheer present at the sea, evading believers, shunning doubt, he hurries off down Pitt Street. So the poem comes to an end very quickly after what seems to be a miracle, a spectacle that all those present cannot come to terms with. So what might we make of this poem, and how might it speak into our life? In our own familiar place, we may not have a George Street or a Pitt Street or those places, but Lesley Murray is determined to just place all of this in everyday life, back into everyday life. And to notice, to stop for a moment and to notice that in the midst of this poem, which moves quite rapidly, there's a sense of stillness about the person right at the heart of it all. So what might this mean? I wonder whether some of you may have noticed, as you heard this poem, references to the gospel or evocations of the gospel. And I'm always conscious whenever I speak here that although we're a diverse community, the preacher always looks Jesus in his 19th century costume right in the eye. But there is a strong sense of that extraordinary documents called the Gospels here in this poem. And one of the things about the Gospels which I love is how all the Gospel writers are at pains to illustrate how fully human Jesus is. Jesus the prophet, Jesus the teacher, Jesus whoever it is that you make of him, how human he is, how moved he is with compassion, how he unerringly is a still presence in the midst of anxiety and pain and doubt and anger. He strides through those documents as the great unknown figure. And he, evading believers, he hurries off down Pitt Street, reminding us of that story in Luke's Gospel, where he preaches a sermon that enrages people with its emphasis on inclusivity. And he evades those who seek to hold on to him and hurries away into the distance. So Lesley Murray's poem, inspired, I am sure, by the Gospels, is a way in which human self-righteousness and the mark of pretense is simply punctured and brought down to its rightful place within human experience. And it's a call to be alive and to be real. And this poem, like the Gospels themselves, hold up a mirror to society which then, as now, is engaged in a process of evasion. Evasion of suffering and of cruelty and the grief which simply accompanies many, many people. Why is it that so many of us carry intense griefs from our own family situations, from our own relationships, from our grief about the way society is going, but how simply that is not acknowledged or simply expected to be something that is expressed in private. So when TV soap operas take the place of religious stories, often there's also again a sense of pretense that our emotional selves can be managed and can be suppressed, and that they're a problem to be solved rather than a mystery to be explored, to misquote a French philosopher who spoke about life as a mystery to explore, not a problem to be solved. So at this turning of the year, as we put our clocks forward, maybe we can begin to address some of the taboos within our own lives and our families and our community about what it means to mourn and to grieve and to shed tears and to feel almost uncontrollable grief, or sometimes uncontrollable joy, where tears also flow as well. And there is, in Lese Murray's poem, as I'm sure you've seen already, there is a sense of wonder and of joy, and a sense of we simply don't know why this person is weeping. Why is it that they are weeping? What is it that they are experiencing? I think we're also permitted to feel a deep sense of grief about the climate emergency that we're facing at the moment. And unless we find ways to express our grief now and into the future, I think that's going to become an almost unendurable burden for us to carry. I'd be interested to hear what you think about that. And I'd also suggest to you that, for those of you particularly who were like me on the climate strike march the other day, that maybe we need to reinvent what Michael Looney did a few years ago and invent a festival of mourning and of weeping. How would it be if people wept publicly in the streets for the state of our planet and the state of our society? I think that will be regarded as quite a blasphemy, because we're often expected to be optimistic and to be happy and to believe what we are told. So weeping and mourning can be a sign of disbelief and of skepticism and a refusal to be comforted by the hard facts of where we are. But that doesn't, of course, exclude moments of joy. But unless we're able to acknowledge our grief, then we're also unable to tap into the wellsprings of joy and of wonder, of celebration and of thanksgiving. And lastly, let us embrace when we are moved to tears, however it may be, by our joy, by our sadness, by the sadness of another, or by the state of what's going on. We turn that into a form of prayer, a way of connecting with our deepest reality, whoever it is and whatever it is that we pray to. So to conclude, I'd like to introduce another writer, and here's a depiction of Jesus by the artist Stanley Spencer. I wonder whether you've come across him, a British artist who served in the medical corps in the Great War. And when he came back, he painted the gospel scenes as happening in everyday life. And people were very scandalized by it, because they were so used to having Jesus in a rather sentimental stained glass window, well away from the problems of everyday life. But his images move me deeply. So here is a man who is yearning, who is reaching out, who is attempting to live into the very depths of what it means to be human. So let me conclude with those words by Father Matta El-Maskin. It is hard to speak of tears. Are not tears a sign of the limitation of speech? When in bewilderment the tongue fails, the heart speaks, and the eyes utter tears. The eyes utter tears. So in the week to come, may your heart speak. May your eyes utter tears. So may it be. And in the words of the great German Christian mystic, if the only prayer that you ever offered in your life was thank you, it will be enough. So, thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.